call to order this regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council at 6:05. Sorry for the late start. We're waiting for other members. Today is March 28, 2023, Tuesday. Can I ask Councilman Luby to read the mission statement, please?
To provide a substantial quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Luby. May I have a roll call, please?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Mr. Robinson is absent. Mr. Tungle?
Here.
And Mr. Tudiakov?
Here, we did get a message that he was on the way, Councilman Robinson, so join us shortly. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance as I ask Councilman Coleman to lead us.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible,
and justice for all. Thank you, Councilman Coleman. We have plenty of visitors here this evening. Thank you for being here. I'll start off with Dave Matthews with OCCP here, Natalie Kale with OC. Donna Van Leer with OC, and Denise Rankin with OC. Jim Wilson, welcome, Superintendent Schools. Gerard Brand with Trident, and Stephanie Moreland with Trident. Thank you for being here this evening, and welcome all of you to Unalaska. Dennis is trotting in. Okay. This time we have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Luby. I understand staff has requested the council amend the agenda to add an item. Would anyone like to move to amend the agenda?
I move to amend the agenda to add an item to the end of the regular session to review a liquor license application for San Diego Tacos to go.
Second.
Robinson? Second. Are there any objections to the amendment? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted, and we'll add the item to the end of the regular agenda. I have a motion to adopt by vote the agenda as amended.
Certainly, sir. Nicholson?
Yes.
Luby?
Yes.
Coleman?
Yes.
Tungle?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Robinson.
Yes.
Thank you. On a vote of 6-0, the agenda has been approved as amended. I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of March 9th meeting.
Move to approve minutes of March 9th, 2023.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Luby. If there's any objection to approve in the minute? Hearing none, no objection. The proposed minutes are approved without objection. Next item, 7, the city manager's report. I'll turn this over to assistant city manager Bill Humpton. Or Chris Laddick on the phone. Welcome, Chris.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, thank you. The report was in your packet, and you should see there were quite a, it was rather a busy 2 weeks since we last met. just draw your attention to some of the work that interim city manager Chris Lyak and I did. In addition to going to the Juneau lobby trip, there were several meetings that we attended while we were more or less conveniently detained in Anchorage for a while due to weather. And let's see, I think I reported that the tide land conveyance from the state for the Bobby Store Small Boat Carver project has been completed. So that is a big step for that project. And you can see it's a busy week here shaping up. Friends from OC and OCCP here already for some meetings this week, and there's some meetings later in the week about digital equity. And, of course, we have tonight's meeting. Any particular questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Bill or Chris? Councilman Bell?
What is the status of the compensation study? Has RFP already been put out, or are we in the process of picking what company is going to
do? We are in the process of that. We've been working with our HR manager, who I would say we were probably 90%. Left the island for 2 weeks, and this is the first week back. So I'm behind 2 weeks from that, but I originally thought would be getting an RFP out. So I anticipate it probably early next week, I'm hoping.
There is a handful of employees that affects whose pay with some of the coworkers that they work with. So to delay this much longer does a disservice to those employees, especially since this is something that should have been done July of last year. So to treat one group of employees differently, no matter what whatever the circumstances are, I don't think is fair in the end. So with whatever haste we can get this done, please do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Tongo, do you have any question or comment?
No question. No question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, thank you, Bill. Next item 8 is community input and announcements. This is time for members of the public to provide information to council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. If anyone wishes to speak.
Hi, Mayor. Go ahead. Council. Good to see you. First announcement is that on April 1st, we'll have our Unalaska Spring Festival. Vendors will be there from 12 to 5. Music will start at 3:30, go to 5. There's also a student art exhibit there. Wish you all to come and be part of that. And then on April 8th, we will have an Easter egg hunt at Sitka Spruce Park. We start the day off with the Lions Club breakfast at 8:30 to 11:30, with the egg hunt later. See the flyers for ages for the schools, for the school-aged children. Anyway, thank you very much, Council.
Thank you for the report.
Hi, Virginia Hatfield, Museum of the Aleutians. I want to remind everyone that the Community Art Show opened last Friday. Thank you to all who came out. And please come in and see all the wonderful talent that we have in our community. And we also have the trivia program this Thursday at 6:30. When it's on KUCB for that.
Okay, thank you.
And Lynn Crane, you say we did decide that last Saturday was not a good time to be doing a fundraiser. And we haven't found a date that works for us, so we are foregoing the soup off again this year. We may do a little online fundraiser. I'm still trying to figure that out because we haven't done that before, but I will keep people posted. We are showing a movie in honor of Women's History Month, Thursday, March 30th, which is 2 days from now, at the beautiful World War II Visitor Center. The movie is called 9 to 5, Story of a Movement. It's really excellent. Everybody should come see it. 6 to 8, light refreshments served. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to speak? announcements or?
I have one, Mr. Mayor. Oh. I have them up on the screen. So this is Marjorie Vito, the city clerk. So this the deadline is this Friday for the senior citizen sales tax refund application. So the deadline for that is Friday. And then the property tax assessment notices went out in the mail last Friday, and April 24th is the deadline to appeal that value. If you have any questions about your appeal, or if you feel like there's any errors or just want to talk to us about it, just call in the clerk's office. And most questions and problems with those are resolved before we ever get to the formal appeal process. So don't hesitate to give us a call. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Comments, announcements? Okay. All right, thank you. Is there anyone on the Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Next item 10 is the public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set for public hearing. There's a 3 limit per person. Please come to the podium and state your name. We have one item for a public hearing, which is Ordinance 2023-01, creating a budget amendment number 5 for the fiscal year 2023 budget, accepting the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services Mobile Integrated Healthcare Community Care Medicine Rural Extension of Care Grant for the amount of $166,666.66. Fund a mobile medical trailer, accepting the Brownsville Community-Wide Assessment Grant for $500,000, and increasing appropriations for generator fuel in the Electric Utility Fund of $1,850,000. Does anyone wish to speak to these items?
Mr. Mayor, can I interrupt? I'm sorry. You forgot number 9, the public comment on agenda items.
Did that one. Public comment.
Okay.
No one wish to speak? Anybody on Zoom? All right. I'm back to public hearing. Does anyone wish to speak? One in the on the phone or Zoom?
No, sir.
Next up is the work session. I have a motion and a second to go into work session.
I make a motion to move into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson and second by Councilman Robinson. Ask council if there's any objection going into a work session. Hearing no objections, we are in a work session. 6:20 p.m. Muskushin Geothermal Project from OCCP LLC. Dave Matthews. You have 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Thanks.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is David Matthews. I'm the program manager for the Muskushin Geothermal Project. And it's been a while since we've spoken, but I want you to know that we've been working every week, every day on the project since we last spoke. We've been sending monthly reports to the city management and the utility management and their own organizations. We're still on the schedule of completing the project in late 2027. This year, 2023, we hope to secure all the project financing, resume the work on the utility access corridor, and to mobilize a large land rig up on the top of the plateau where we plan on drilling out the well field. In 2024, we'll complete the well field drill out. We have planned 3 wells. We think the resource is so prominent, though, that it might only take 2 to find enough power to run the 36 megawatt gross plant. we'll kind of complete the road too. We'll just get enough road pioneered in there to start the well drilling by good weather next year. And then we will use one of our subcontractors to perform geotechnical work where all the foundations go and to help us lay out some of the final designs for those plans. 2025 is putting in all the terrestrial line. There'll be approximately 9.5 miles from the plateau down to Broad Bay. That will be the transmission line buried in the side of the utility access road. There's a substation at Broad Bay that will connect the subsea and the...
This meeting is being recorded.
And then there's a 4.5 mile dual subsea line going in. We've done all the engineering, the bathymetry, the magnetometer. We know where the route is. We've done that engineering, so we've got contractors hired to put that in, and that will take place in 2026, kind of as a single project. And then we have substations on each side of the transmission, the subsea line, and then we have a battery energy storage system that's going to be coming into on the Analaska side where the subsea cable comes in. And then 2027 is pretty much just erecting the plant itself. So this is the summer work. There's as much work going on off season on the engineering side, the procurement side, and the manufacturing side. So we have all the contractors for the project lined up and decided on. We've got all the design criteria, the specifications written. We've gone out for RFPs. We've done best value evaluations for who's going to be involved in the project. And so we've got that type of work activity that's been going on behind the scenes besides the permitting. And the permitting is in good shape. We've just received a renewal on our core permit that allows us to do all the work from Broad Bay up to the site. It was renewed just last month, and it's good until 2026 now. So that turns us loose there. The subsea portion is still in progress. It's been submitted over a year ago. NIMS and NOAA are involved now, and they've asked us for more biological assessment stuff, so our environmental subs have put that together, and we submitted updates to that. We won't need the subsea permit until 2026, so we still got a few years to get that, so I'd have to say that's well on track, too. The peripheral permits from Fish and Game and DEC and all that are well in hand, too, but the two main permits to build the project, one's in hand and one's been submitted a little over a year, and it's not timeline constrained. We've got, you might have seen the press release, but we signed close to $100 million contract with Ormat Technologies in January of this year. They're going to provide all the technology for the power plant. It's an EPC, an engineering, procure, and construction contract where once they get released, they'll do all the engineering, they'll do the procurement, manufacturing, and they'll bring all that to the site, and then 2027 erect it. So it's a kind of a turnkey type contract, and they're a vertically integrated company and one of the largest in the world for geothermal plants. It's really going to be a cool plant because it's load following. It's unique for this load here in Unalaska. We took into account all the processor loads, all the city loads, and we're trying to build this plant so it will ramp up and ramp down according to the fishing season loads. And with the battery energy storage system, it will be acting as a shock absorber to take power when it's released quickly from the cranes dropping loads and pick up power quickly when the cranes pick up the load around here. So we're pretty confident that this will be a solution once we upgrade with the city upgrade the utility distribution system. This would be a total solution for the city to be an integrator for all the power needs in the city. It's not a innovative plant in that regard. There's several plants in the world that do this load following, one being closely related in Puna, Alaska, where Ormat built that plant too, and it's an isolated grid, small population, but they have a lot of industrial loads, and it follows the load. So we're pretty confident confident that the technology is there to make this work that way. Most geothermal plants, though, are like one big unit, and it base loads, and it throws its power into one grid, and then it's a massive grid, so it just runs full out all the time. But this plant will have six individual units, smaller units, six megawatt units, and we'll be able to ramp up and ramp down quickly, and we'll have redundancy and resiliency just within the design of the plan itself. Regarding financing, we're in weekly meetings with the DOE. They're still our primary source for construction lending and for long-term financing. We worked with DOE for about a year, and we kind of abandoned them because they were just a little hard to work with. Now, and we went to private market looking for financing for a while. Now we're back with the DOE, and we've got a good team that we're working together. We're trying to bring the DOE financing into play. But one of the things they are expecting us is to be able to get more equity into the project. That's one of the reasons that we have this delegation out here this week. We invited ADA and ADA to be here. We just had a workshop with them last week. We've had the governor, had a governor workshop and a Department of Economic and Commerce kind of top-downing this. They're supporting the project. The more they learn about it, now we've got the executive director of ADA, Randy Raro, here today, and Curtis Day is the executive director of AEA. Then they have Audrey Alstrom, who is the director of alternative energy and energy efficiency here, and then Connor Erickson, who is the planning manager. Those four groups, and this is a follow-up from the workshops we had last Friday with them. We want them to meet the community, see we're going to have a helicopter and take them out to the site tomorrow. And then we have some trilateral meetings where the city and OC and the Q Tribe and ADA and us are meeting in the morning, tomorrow morning. We're doing this helicopter thing and lunch out there for several hours tomorrow, and then in the afternoon, again, another trilateral where the city and facilities and the processors that are available and Q-Tribe and OC are invited. And we got Westward Seafood, UNICE, and Trident representatives here to participate in that meeting. The whole concept is to let the ADA AEA know their support, broad support for this, and there's also a need that's coming up. So I think that's about all I had for right now, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Any questions from council for Dave on the project? Dave? Councilman Luby, then Councilman Bell.
I just want to say thanks for coming and giving us an update. It's been a little while since I've heard anything about what's been going on over there and if the project was going to move forward. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes. So, well, full-time job, and it's been fun to do. And I think we've gained a tremendous amount of confidence in the design, better amount of confidence in the resources. This is an amazing resource. You haven't heard some of the stats on that. It's one of the world-class. It's well-known in the geothermal field. The discovery well that took place out there did a lot of testing, 34 days of testing, and we were able to get top geophysicists in the nation analyze that. And it's a world-class discovery well, and it provides confidence to us that the resource is there. It's been discovered. We don't have to poke holes around to find it. It's a fracture that's got such a productivity index that one well, 13-inch well, will give us at least 20 megawatts. It might give us more. We know where the other two lungs are. We got all those geophysical overlays. So you know, we're claiming that the resource is confirmed right now, just from that one test well. And, well, that will be an argument that we'll have with other geophysicists to win, but we're happy about it. And so, yeah, things are moving.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Bell?
I guess I got two questions here. I was kind of going to them real fast. As far as financing, what are some of the challenges you guys are running into, and what's the strategy for securing financing and the contract with Ormat? Is that dependent upon OCCP securing financing?
There's been a lot of challenges with financing. It's the return on investment, the bottom line, the return on investment, the cost of putting this plant in, compared to the revenue that we're going to get for it, puts a lower return on investment that doesn't attract capital up there in the industrial market. There's enough investment opportunities for them to look somewhere else, plus being a small town in an isolated grid in the middle of the Aleutians doesn't give people lot of confidence either. You know, and so we messed around with the capital markets for some time, and we've talked over 30 bankers, investment bankers, firms, J.P. Morgan's, the Bank of America's, the Wells Fargo's, those traditional ones, and investment funds. We just couldn't get over their objection. We're finding out that in the investment world, it's hard to get the first one to say yes. if you get somebody that finally says, okay, we're in, then other people will be in. So we're back down to government financing pretty much, where we get low interest rates over long term. And that's a cumbersome process. What's some of the objections? Some of the resources are drilled and proven yet. Some is that the city of Unalaska doesn't have enough wealth. They've overstrived what they need, you know. So we have to take on these arguments all the time, but we're starting to win pretty significantly, I think, and I measure that. But what it's done is it's slowed us down a lot from where we wanted to be. It's taken us over a year to come back into the full circle with DOE. The passage of the IRA law just recently by Congress has tremendously helped us. There's a lot of money floating around out there, but that money is not that easy to get as quick as we'd like. But the IRA law has put in investment tax credits that can be direct pay now to certain organizations, and that changes our economic dynamics quite a bit. That law has been passed, and it's in the books, but it hasn't been ruled on by Treasury yet how to interpret some of the portions of the law that affect us. So we can't take that to the bank yet. So these are the types of things that be an issue or an issue. Regarding ORMAT and the contract, we signed the contract, we're committed to each other, but I don't pull the trigger. We don't pull the trigger on the ORMAT contract until we have the financing secured. So we don't have a financial obligation until some conditions are met on our end. Thank you.
And this is up to the council and end it.
Well, another hour. COVID. I do have a question.
COVID.
So you have a discovery well, you said? You have one test well?
Yeah.
Is that the same that was done back in the same location back in the 80s?
Yeah.
So they were the exact same spot, right?
Exact same spot.
So from what I recall, the argument was that it wasn't like language, but not hot enough, or like there just wasn't going to resource, wasn't going to be able to produce enough to a project mm-hmm. of that magnitude. So I'm wondering what is different in what was discovered now, or maybe it's how it's used. So what makes a difference in 40 years?
I think you just have bad information. that it's always been a good well. And it's 390 degrees. We know there's been over 409 reports written on this. People have made PhDs on the subject of this well. And the resource itself is 2 miles wide, about 15 square miles long. We know exactly where it is, and that's one fracture. We've scored the productivity on it now. We've done more engineering, I guess, to add to this confidence. It has a PI, a productivity index of 30,000 pounds per square inch per hour. That's one of the biggest productivity indexes in the world. We looked at 8 geothermal fields. One well in Iceland has a 37,000 pound per inch well, but the whole average Icelandic field is 8,700. So we can do that mathematically without the dependence of the size of the hole. The resource itself is figured to be 590 degrees, but the well that was discovered only went a couple feet into this new fracture. And what it does, it's hard rock. It's not permeable as like you might think of a sands or oil sands or oil field. But this is all hard rock. Nothing travels through it. These cracks. And you've got to find crack is. And what's been measured from the by the geophysicists is that the reservoir itself is over 590 degrees. Our well measured 390. So what's happening is a lot of the surface water, the snow melt and all that is going into this area, it's hitting that crack, getting superheated. then it comes out of the ground at 390 degrees and some of the steam, and then we just re-inject that back in the ground, and it just runs back in a circle again. So it's hot enough. We've got the design. This is called a medium-range thermal plant. You know, the hotter the better, for sure. But we think you drill 2,000 feet, which is shallow for a geothermal well, and that's where this discovery well was, we can drill a little deeper and it gets even hotter. So the hotter you got, the more entropy you got, and the more heat transfer you can get out of your plant. So I think we're conservative on the temperature. We're probably conservative on our understanding of the flow rate that we're going to get out of this plant, out of this one well. And we've got plans for three wells, and we think two will really do it. We can put two right close together, hit the same fracture, and with that productivity index, we should be able to 50 megawatts, 250 years is what the person says.
And to move forward, you're going to need more than just one well.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's, so what if you test and you can't find another well or two that is required, I guess? What would be the plans moving forward?
You keep finding. I mean, we know where the crack is. We know where the resource is. We've got the drill logs that occurred there. There was four wells drilled before the discovery well was hit. And three of those other wells, if they would have just drilled another 80 to 100 feet, they would hit the same fracture. They were scattered in a pretty close area there. But we could tell that from the drilling logs and where the fracture layouts from the geophysics. So, you know, there's fields in Mexico that produce 1 to not even 2 megawatts per well of thermal energy. They might have to have 16 or 20 wells to be the same amount of plant power that we're going to get out of one or two wells here. So, you know, it's a tremendous volcano sink and the way to prove a reservoir is all done mathematically by the size of the hole. There's pressure, temperature, and productivity index. The only thing that's a variable is how much flow rate you get. The bigger the hole, the bigger the flow rate comes out. But that could be, there's methodologies for calculating that that's accepted within the deal. So, we drill one and say that we don't hit, we just go 2 feet with a small diameter, and then figure that we have two drill rigs planned to come in, one to set the conductor in the casing, and then that drill, but it's a pretty simple drilling job.
Chris had a question. Chris Laddick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Dave, this is Chris Laddick. And are you saying that you've extrapolated all this information from Republic Drilling's reports?
Republic Drilling, two other geothermal firms that have studied this and put it out, and our own physicists and the DOE's publication on what it takes to confirm a well field.
And so that'd be Geothermax?
Geothermax, right, was one of the studies.
Yeah, it seems amazing to me that you can claim, 300 megawatts for 500 years?
Yeah. That's the whole geothermal resource by reasonable calculations. Now, the plateau where we're drilling at is more like 50 to 60 for 200 years. That's where all the resistivity test, the magnetic test, the mercury test, the vapor test, all the ways that you explore for geothermal have all been overlaid on top of each other, and they kind of superimpose the target area that was drilled. And so that's the 15-square-mile area that's rich in that's probably the most ripe for finding the resource. But we're saying we don't even need to find the resource. It's been found, and that's more than half of the risk in a geothermal project field development is finding the resource. Normally, you go up there and you drill a bunch of holes to find it. But after using the best geophysics you can, we're saying it's found, and taking data from a 3-inch flow test is a perfectly acceptable way. The chemistry doesn't change. The pressure, the temperature that comes out won't change depending on the size of the hole. and you can calculate a productivity index. You can do all that with a 3-inch, and it should be the same as a 16-inch or a 24-inch. So it's just a matter of the only thing that's subject to questioning is the flow rates, because when you go from a 3-inch to a 13-inch, which is our size, you're going to have a different flow rate, but there's calculated methodologies to do that. And then where people get concerned that you might have well interference with each other, if you drill too close and you have drawdown, one well is going to outperform and it's going to suck off the other well, and you're not going to be able to have, be able to manage the well field, and you might have to drill somewhere else. We don't have that here because the productivity index is so high, and our power demand is down to 36 megawatts. So people, there's been 16 different estimates on the productivity of the well field from that one well, and it's gone from 0.9 to 3.9 megawatts. Say it another way, it's gone from a 12-megawatt field to a 32-megawatt field from one well.
32 megawatts in one well?
Yeah, is the high, and then 0.9 megawatts or 12 megawatts on the low end.
And is there any well in the world that, makes 32 megawatts?
Yeah, one in Iceland. It's stronger than this one. But the combined Iceland field has got a productivity index of well below this. When you combine them all together, they've got one well that's about 30% larger than this one, it looks like. But most of them are way smaller. Most wells are in the 2 to 3 megawatt range. We've looked at 4,000 different wells across 16 different well fields. And the group density of the wells are in the, you know, 90% of them are in the 2 to 3 megawatt range, and there's some that are up to 40 on the distribution pattern that we plotted. SP1 is far to the right. It's the other some that are bigger, and the majority are way smaller.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Appreciate all that information. Hopefully, a young. Young people are listening to this so they can get up there and learn about that volcano. It's running. I know it takes years, but thank you for the information. We look forward for your next written report. Thanks. All right, we'll move on. Next item is item B. Item B is the FY24 CMMP, and I'll turn this over to Bill Bumpka for discussion and review.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. It's easier to do it from here. So tonight, the second draft of the CMMP that I'd like to present to you for your input. The last one was January 24th that we presented, and I wanted to point out that there were several changes made based on your input at the last meeting. For one, we reduced the FY24 total request by 18%, which is less, almost $6 million less, down from $32.8 million to $26.9 million. And the general fund request decreased $2,300,000 from $8.9 million to $6.6 million. I think the last count, there are 15 projects. And if you want to just look up at the spreadsheet that Margie has up there, you can see it's really broken down into the general fund and the proprietary funds, per usual. Then you also see the external funding. So there are 5 general fund projects at $6.6 million and 3 electric proprietary fund projects at almost $1.3 million. We only have 1 project in the ports proprietary fund, that's the restrooms, for just under $500,000. We have nothing proposed for the solid waste proprietary fund, and there's a $50,000 project proposed for the wastewater proprietary fund. 2 projects under the Water Proprietary Fund. The facilities maintenance plan, which is titled various because that plan, which is a component to this, as well as the rolling stock plan, covers a couple of them. So I just listed that as $143,000. And then the external funds, which are grants or other sources that we're hoping to acquire for some of the projects, you'll see three of those are Captain's Bay Road. We're listing this sort of differently than how it has been in the past because we're changing how we're approaching various funding sources as well for that. But under the external funds, you see that's up to almost $17.9 million. But the total pro forma for the CMMP FY24 at just under $27 million. And then if you like, we can go into some of the projects and review those. Or do you want to pull up the sheets for me? So, yeah. So the captains, we'll start with the Electric Proprietary Fund, and this is the Captain's Bay Electric Line Installation. And this one here is basically $2.3 million. This has been on the CMMP for a few years now. And I think this one is also integrated with what's happening with our geothermal project to get us online. So this one is crucial that we get it moving at the time that we do. The electric distribution equipment replacement. This is another one. And I'm thinking one here I think we have for about $100,000 to get this project here. And then the next one should be our large generator set rebuild, which is $1 million. We've been using about $1 million a year out of proprietary fund to maintain our gen sets. And then I believe the last one for the electric proprietary fund is the large transformer maintenance and service, which is $195,000, just under $200,000. You move to the next one should be the general fund. The first one up is our McCushion geothermal project. Well, that's external, really, for grants. I think we're anticipating $2 million from an external source. There's part of the Captain's Bay Road project, as you can see. And even there, it's talking about segments A through D. We've realigned that to do basically three phases. Phase FY this coming summer, summer of 23, summer of 24, and then summer 25. I say summer because some of the money that we already have in hand will start bridging FY 23 and 24. The equipment storage building, and hopefully you received a copy of the memorandum from Acting Public Works Director Scott Brown to explain why the equipment storage building is needed and how it really, it's more than just a vehicle garage. It's a valuable amount of cash that we have invested in our fleet and our large vehicles. So we have left that on for further discussion this evening. That's at $1.35 million. That number has been somewhat consistent. HVAC controls and upgrade. This one has kind of been around for a few years. I think we populated it with some funding back when we had funds from the feds, the COVID money. But this one is on here for another $433,000 to complete that project, 11 buildings. This is the only project that is being proposed for FY24 funding by courts. It's the restroom at the UMC, which is badly needed for all the users that we have coming out there. And we get into some of the proprietary fund. There are proprietary funds that we're sourcing some of the expenses for the Captain's Bay Road Improvement corridor plan. This one is the wastewater line. We're requesting $50,000 this time for that. And then the Captain's Bay Road water line extension. I'm looking at another, I think, $3.6 million for FY24. The balance of that would be in 25. Our Yancey Lake Hydro Survey, we're looking for, I'm just jumping around here, $72,000, just under $73,000 to do the survey of Icy Lake. And the last one from the water is the on-site chlorine generation project, which we're seeking $448,000 to finish that project. And that's from the Water Proprietary Fund, both that and the Hydro Survey. Is that all of them, Margie? That's all of them in terms of these sheets. So there's a couple ways to read it in the memo. I have them listed by fund, and you have this the spreadsheet. And then these are the project summary sheets that accompany those every year. So at this point, I guess I'd open it up for your discussion and questions about this slate of projects.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Comments or questions? Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you. We don't see it in here yet, but there was something that happened when GCI was putting their fiber in, and it took the last conduit across our bridge. I objected to it at the time, and now with the prospect of Trident coming out and and wanting to hook up to geothermal power, we need to get that somewhere in the CMMP to be able to complete in time to be able to hook, because we're going to have to run a new electric line to be able to service Trident, and it's got to go across that bridge. So that's something, just get on your radar. I think Steve probably is nodding. We need to get that on the radar and get that in the works, because we're going to have to work with DOT to be able to cross that bridge with a piece of conduit. Just a note.
All right, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Coleman?
So first off, thank you for the update or the cost analysis on the warehouse, including those numbers and the rationale there. Although I do have a question. Here it says like basically 1.3, and then you had contingency, so close to 1.5. But in the workup and the numbers, it's showing more like 1.95.
The 1.350 number. There must be an error in there.
I mean, it kind of changes the layout, what you're trying to represent here. It's a big difference. And the building cost estimate versus the net savings. So on that whole formula. And how many pieces of equipment are expected to be able to go in there? You've got an example of basically four in here. I don't know if that's supposed to be representative of what was anticipated for it to accommodate, or maybe six total.
I think it always depends on what vehicles are parking in there. But I know Scott answered the question.
We're going to VW Bugs, right?
No, Council. I just put those as an example of a few of the pieces of equipment that we had. If we were storing those, just to use the 4.4 percentages to show the savings on it. But I did not do a calculation of how many vehicles that we can store, depending on what combination of vehicles we're using at the time.
There's just, I'm just looking at the scope of this and how big and how many, pieces, and really haven't seen other than that it's a four-sided shed that's going to be lightly heated and going to have a concrete basin with a possible oil-water separator kind of thing or not, and all that kind of jazz?
Yes. Yep. And also, I did find a math error on that spreadsheet, so I do have corrected sheets for you all.
Okay.
So I'll make sure to get to you.
Thank you. Another question, different topic. Just want to be sure on this that, back to my spreadsheet, let's see. Going back to the spreadsheet, for general fund, Capital State Road, safety and paving, the 3.1 is basically a placeholder. It would be our commitment should we be granted the steps. That is going to be our obligation. Is that correct?
Rephrase the question, please.
So we have 9.9 is hoping to get from the STIP for the Captain Bay Road safety and paving section, and you have 3.1 in the general fund. That is a placeholder for if we get that STIP, that's going to be our obligation, our commitment.
Correct.
Okay. Period. Okay. Being clear.
I mean, bear in mind, we're searching a lot of sources for this. Some, you know, it's the congressionally directed funding, Senator, there's probably not going to be the match required for some of the other programs. So it's going to be a mix of what we're successful at getting. That is probably the worst case scenario, like our match would be from the sources we're looking right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Luby, and Bill.
So on the Captain's Bay Road, so if that's just kind of a placeholder, would there be a reason we wouldn't move that out of the general fund and maybe take it from the 1% special revenue fund that is set aside for capital projects?
I'd have to look at that. No, I haven't had a chance. Now that you make that question, that's a good one. I don't know if Clay is online and can answer that question routinely or not, but I suspect that if the balance is there and that's what you would direct us to do, we could pay it that way.
Yeah, and I guess one of my questions a while ago when we were going through revenue was, you know, what's in those special revenue funds? We still haven't seen that, that part of the revenue side of the budget. But that would be a question that would drop your general funds by $3 million right there.
And I know we were trying to get a revenue fund, proprietary fund presentation ready for this evening. It wasn't ready, but that should happen at the next council meeting.
Okay. Thanks. I know you guys are shorthanded.
It's all right. No, we're trying to work around that and get things done.
Appreciate everything.
Can't keep pushing the calendars back and back.
Right. You know, so, it's hard to make decisions without all the information. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Councilman Bell and Councilman Tungle.
My question is, and this is information you get back to us with, but it gets asked every time, so and we've never gotten an answer, is impact rates, the impact on utility rates. We've got almost $1.3 million in electric fund. Is that going to require an increase in rates in order to keep that fund where it should be? Same with the water fund. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of, compared to past PMMP, we don't have as much money in the proprietary fund portion of it, but it still does impact rates.
And we'll get the information to you as soon as some of these numbers settle down and we have that ability, but constantly changes. We have an answer.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bell, when they do the rate study, they look at this document, and so that's why it's so important. They look down the road, and then when they set the rates, they're looking at that capital spending, and they incorporate that into the rates. And so these capital projects that we're currently experiencing, for the most part, like the generator rebuild, they looked at that and they budgeted for that as part of the rate study. We're going to do another rate study in the next fiscal year, and we'll look at those again because they've just changed a little bit. But a lot of it for utilities is the same. So these items are budgeted for in the rates, and it shouldn't affect the rates.
So then theoretically, there should be numbers within that rate study that were added in there or accounted for. So that number should be available.
That correct. That number should be available. They took the capital spending as well as the operational costs. They also took the capital spending into account when they set the rates.
We look at what the difference between the projection and what we actually spend those. That rate study's over several years. It's supposed to cover several years. So we go back and look and say, hey, this is what was projected. Is that how much we actually spent in those proprietary funds? So to know that that rate increase was close to what we had already figured.
I think kind of the report card for proprietary funds is you look at your amount of unallocated budgetary reserve, and that's kind of how you track. It's your savings account. And so if you don't use it in proprietary funds, like if I don't use that diesel that we asked for, it just goes back into the proprietary fund. And so at the end of every year, actually, you can look at it all the time, but at the end of every year, you take a really hard look at where you're at because it's like a small business. You know, if you don't spend it on something, maybe you didn't need to replace the roof on your store, then you still have those funds in the proprietary fund.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Tungo, you have any questions for Bill or Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. No, this thank you very much, Bill. This is thanks for the hard work you guys putting this together and make it easier for us to understand all of this. So, and everything looks good to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tungo. So you'll be getting us some more information that has been requested for.
Correct.
Okay.
And then just know the next time we're planning on, of course, you can raise this at any time, but April 11th, we're doing a follow-up on any questions that you all have asked tonight. So it's the next meeting. Well, we have a special one on the 10th, but the normal Tuesday meeting, this will be back on with any questions or answers that you guys asked.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. Rolling stock.
Sorry about that. Scott is our, at this time, he's our acting Director of Public Works, and has done a yeoman's job of trying to take what we've done in the past and make sense of it and put a new plan together based on the last one and some good numbers. Scott, if you want to walk through that one, and if you're also interested, then in the facilities maintenance plan. So those are two components of the CMMP that are next.
Mr. Mayor, Council, thank you. The rolling plan, we've set a policy and how we do our replacements for our rolling stock. We follow that as closely as we can. We've actually extended the life of most of the vehicles that we're talking about today. What we're replacing is four patrol vehicles with public safety, and each one of those vehicles will be they've reached their 7 or 8 year, I believe one of them is 9 year life cycle, and we'll be replacing those in kind with other city departments. The big conversation is we do need to replace a road grader. We have 3 road graders at this time. One of them that we're proposing to replace has reached its end of its life cycle. was purchased in 2004. And we're proposing a new one, which would cost $1 million. The existing one, we've spent, it's had the engines rebuilt, the seals, everything replaced, and the hydraulic systems. Those are already, not already, but those are now showing wear and signs and leaking and are due to be, if we were to try and salvage it, we would have to redo that again. To date, we've spent a little over, a little under $600,000 in repair on that grader. My first question was, how come so expensive for a road grader? That's just what they cost now. They're computerized, they're state-of-the-art. There's nothing extra that we have. It's exactly the same as we ordered in 2017. And that's the big one. The other one is the flatbed. We're asking to replace the flatbed in kind with an existing road crew flatbed that's that was purchased in 1995. This one would be a rollback flatbed to potentially help support. Not that we want to get in the business of towing vehicles, but help support, get some of these abandoned vehicles out of town or to the landfill. Currently, if we do have a situation where we have to move a vehicle using public works equipment, the only way is with a loader with forks on it, and that there's no way to do that and not damage a vehicle considerably with the forks. So that would be the two big changes in the two big ticket items opposed to the regular vehicles. Other than that, if you have any specific questions on vehicles, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any comments or questions for Scott, Councilman Tungle?
Yeah, on the flatbed that you request, how much usage do you think you're gonna be doing that? Are we using some local company to do some going out or moving some vehicles around?
We do. Thank you, Councilman Tungle. We are working on a plan to put out a RFP to the private sector to hopefully help us with the abandoned vehicle issue. We're working on that now. That might be a little bit out. But as far as the situation with the rollback, we do request the private sector to help us with tows. And I don't, this wouldn't just be used for towing vehicles. It would be, primary function would be a flatbed to be used in the normal duties with the roads crew. It would just be additional function would be that we would have the ability to use it as a rollback tow truck. But the situation is the private sector is usually tied up with their own businesses using their equipment, the ones that do have rollback. There has been private sector that has come to our aid and helped us with that. But it's more on their timeline than the timeline that we may need it. So it would be a definite advantage to having this particular piece of equipment in the city's inventory.
Thank you. Thank you. That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Sandler. Any other questions?
Mayor, Council, Councilmember Robinson, did you have a question?
How many vehicles we have total in the Department of Public Safety?
I do not have that answer off the top of my head. I certainly could get in a breakdown of all the vehicles for the next meeting.
The reason I asked for that is we're replacing four of them, but maybe we might consider replacing them, staggering it out a little bit more. I think things are probably going to get a little tight here for the city, and we need to look where we can. So we have time on that, but I appreciate an answer. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll get that to you. I just want to also add that we did not purchase any vehicles last year. We had three, I believe, slated to not public safety vehicles, but we did have three vehicles that we were going to purchase, but because of delays in the orders and everything, we ended up purchases. So it has been a year since we've actually followed our cycle of purchasing. And the public vehicle safety vehicles that we are proposing to replace now would follow the replacement plan. And I believe two of them are actually beyond that replacement plan that we've adopted. But we would be happy to look at alternatives with the amount of staff and needs that we have. Thank you, Councilman Robinson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Other comments, questions for staff?
Mr. Mayor and Council, I'll just discuss briefly the facility maintenance plan. We cut this way back this year. my goal is to present you with a much more holistic view of the maintenance plan. I'd like to get you a five-year outlook or a 10-year outlook. So what we did this year is we tried to cut it down to what do we actually need to accomplish this year. And in that, we came up with we need to the Public Works supply warehouse. There's an electrical panel inside that is out of OSHA compliance. The difficult issue with it is once we touch the panel, we have to get everything up to code compliance, which would include changing the conduit and the disconnect on the outside of the building is also going its age and needs to be replaced for safety reasons. While we're doing all that and have all that tore out, we thought it'd be a good idea to put in that project, putting LED lights in at the same time, which is actually a rather cheap part of the cost of this project. $7,000 just for the parts for that alone. but that project, the quotes that we got so far, or estimates, I should say, is around $152,000. The other one is the wastewater treatment plant. It's got three intake vents on it. Two of them are on the each side. Those ones seem to be doing better than the one that's on the cliff side. The two on the beach side are about 2 foot by 2 foot. The one on the cliff side is about 5 feet by 5 feet. And what happens when the wind blows and the rain blows, it's just driving that rain and wind into the open vent. We've replaced it with metal filters at this time, but that's even shown wear. And it's creating leaks into the building now through that vent system. And so the original specs did call for hood vents on it. So we're just trying to get that back to what the original specs of the building were. This quote, I also believe we'll be able to get it under this quote. When we asked for estimates, that was with stainless steel. I'd like to see estimates with aluminum and galvanized as well, if we can get the same life out of it. The other thing, other major maintenance project we have is painting. Again, We just try to get this year's painting. My hope is to come before you again in the future and show you a plan of maybe 3 years worth of painting, listing them down into the worst case to the worst needed to the best case. We can look at it with a little bit better idea and have a plan in place for it. But we need to do the Henry Swanson House, the elementary school on East Broadway needs the playground equipment, which is our responsibility. The substation across from the City Hall here needs to be painted. And then the 8-plex and the 4-plex on Loop Road. Now, that's all I have for the major maintenance projects for this year.
Okay, thank you. Robinson, Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, thank you. I don't like the idea of deferred maintenance because we've spent a lot of money getting the facilities that we have. And I realize, I mean, if we have to substitute maintenance or substitute not replacing rolling stock to maintenance of facilities, we better be maintaining facilities in, you know, that are in critical need of maintaining or have, you know, we've had some pretty bad storms. I think there needs to be a little closer look at, you know, at that. I think the school is probably going to need to have a roof replaced quite soon. So some of those things that I think we need to be a little less quick to defer. Just a comment. Thank you.
Councilman Robinson, thank you. Yeah, we looked at this, and our intent is not to defer any of our projects. If we have anything that needs attention, we're going to do that in our regular facilities maintenance project. When we looked at this, it's what do we need to do now? As far as the school roof, we're right now looking at an RFP going out to get some architects to come up and do a roof study for us. Because the pool roof is in need of replacing. Once we get that, then I'll be back before you to tell you what the plan is to get a roof that's going to last us as well as the costs associated with that. But certainly our goal is not to defer any maintenance if we can get away from it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Any questions? None? All right, thanks. Does anyone here wish to speak? Public comment, 3 minutes per person. None? City clerk, any comments on Zoom or phone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'll request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
Make a motion to return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Coleman. Hearing no objections. We'll go back to regular session at 7:18 p.m. We are now on the regular agenda. Persons wish to speak. On the regular agenda, items must sign up with city clerk. There's three-minute time limit. Unfinished business ordinance 2020-301, second reading, creating a budget amendment number 5 to fiscal year 2023 budget, accepting the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services Mobile Integrated Healthcare Community Paramedicine Rural Extension of Care Grant, $166,666.66 to fund a mobile medical trailer, accepting Brownfield Community-Wide Assessment Grant of $500,000, and increasing the appropriations for generator fuel and the electric utility fund of $1,850,000. I have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance 2020-301.
Move to adopt Ordinance 2020-301. Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Luby. I'll turn this over to the city manager for more information.
So, Mayor and Council, this, as you said, is the second reading. I think some of this we even had a work session on. Two of the reasons for the budget amendment are to add over $660,000 in income, one for the Brownfields grant that we received, and the other is for the mobile integrated health care trailer. And then, of course, the large ticket item is outgoing $1.8 million for fuel. That's coming from the utility fund. Happy to try and answer any other questions you all have about this particular.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Council discussion? Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, thank you. I want to thank Interim Fire Chief for the report on the trailer. I think this is a good thing, and do we have a spot inside for it for storage? Nodding your head, yes. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Robinson, any further council discussion? Councilman Coleman?
No, I just want to say thank you for management for following up on my questions. I do not have any further comments or questions.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. No? Okay, hearing none, the city clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
And I'll restate the motion. The motion is to approve Ordinance 2023-01, the second reading. Roll call, please.
Certainly, sir. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Trumbull?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
A roll call vote of 6-0. Ordinance 2023-01, second reading passes. Next item is new business. Ordinance 2023-01, first reading, amending the Unalaska Code of Ordinance, section 6.40.05, subparagraph C, senior citizens refund. I have a motion and a second to introduce the ordinance 2023-02 and schedule it for a public hearing and second reading on April 11th, 2023.
Make a motion to introduce ordinance 2023-02 and schedule for public hearing on second reading on April 11th, 2023.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. I'll turn this over to the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This also was covered in a work session recently. As you know, Council Clerk Margie Veter has done most of the work on this, and I'd be glad to defer the presentation and comments to her.
Thank you to the city manager and the mayor. We all know that we had a long discussion about this on March 9th and focused on the eligibility for the refund and the amount of the refund. Y'all directed us to bring back an ordinance to increase the refund to $400 and change the residency requirements to include voter registration at an address in Unalaska or qualification for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend. The directive also requested that I do some research on using Real ID as a potential eligibility or potential qualifier for the refund. I don't really feel that the Real ID is a viable option to prove residency because residency, as is contemplated in code for this refund, isn't a requirement of obtaining a Real ID. For instance, after talking with our DMV agent here in Alaska, an applicant for a Real ID can supply a letter from an employer saying that they live on the employer's premises here, and a cell phone bill. And that's sufficient to prove residency for the purposes of the Real ID. But that doesn't necessarily prove residency in Unalaska as contemplated in code for this refund. Also, enforcement of the Real ID has been delayed nationwide until May 7th of 2025. So I don't really think that that's a viable option to use as a qualifier for this refund. So the proposed ordinance presented this evening increases the amount as you requested, and then added a new paragraph 5, which reads, I'll put it up here on the screen, the underlying portion. Applicants shall prove residency in Unalaska by providing to the city clerk evidence of either current voter registration in the state of Alaska at an address in Unalaska, or evidence of approved eligibility for the state of Alaska permanent fund dividend for the current year at an address in Unalaska. At the city clerk's discretion, other proof of residency in Unalaska may be accepted. So the language, you know, specifically describing the proof of residency required does set clear standards for establishing residency, while allowing some discretion for a rare circumstance when an applicant really is a resident of Unalaska, but has neither registered to vote or applied for a PFD, because there would be examples of that, I think. So the city attorney, when we were reviewing this, suggested that we include that final outlet phrase. At the clerk's discretion, other proof of residency may be accepted. So council can still choose to proceed with the ordinance as presented, or you can amend it, or you can still choose to do nothing and leave it as it is. That's certainly up to you. And I believe the amendment as written is in keeping with your directive. And so based on that, I would recommend proceeding with it. But again, that's council's decision.
Okay, thank you, City Clerk. Councilman Ruby.
I just want to say thank you very much. I think that it accomplished exactly what we wanted to do. So, and with that, I am going to abstain from voting because I do financially gain from this. So I'm not going to actually vote on it. Not that I'm 65 or older, but I am married to somebody that is. So anyway, thank you.
Mayor, we may not have quorum for that.
Councilman Robinson.
Yes, thank you for looking into the Real ID issue, and I support this as it is written. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Coleman, then Councilman Tungle.
Thank you. Just for clarity, so since this is a new process, I take it that when they do show proof, you would have, like, checkbox that they showed this and this, and then if there would be another item that, for your discretion, you would write out or show that this is how you came to that conclusion.
Absolutely. We diligently record all of that.
Of course you do. It's a matter of record. I just want to make sure that does
get
recorded
did.
Like that now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman, Councilman Dungle, and Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be in support of this as it's written. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Nicholson, then Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will also be in full support of this, and I will be voting on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Councilman Bell.
First of all, real quick, I would disagree with Councilman Luby that she has a substantial financial interest and needs to recuse herself from the vote. However, it appears that everyone on the council is in the consensus on approving this, and therefore I won't pose any kind of objection to that. Beyond that, this looks well thought out, well researched, and I'll support staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hey, so anybody got to say it with me? Come on, folks. Unless there's a tie. All right, thank you. All right. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'll restate the motion. Motion was moved and seconded. Introduce Ordinance 2023-02. It's scheduled for a public hearing and second reading on April 11, 2023. Request a roll call vote, please.
Certainly, sir. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby? This is to set it for public hearing and second reading. Yes. Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Robbins?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 6-0, Ordinance 2023-02 is scheduled for a public hearing and second reading on April 11th, 2023. Okay, thank you. Item is Resolution 2023-10, establishing the rate of levy on assessed properties within the City of Unalaska for the fiscal year 2024. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2023-10.
Move to adopt Resolution 2023-10.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Coleman. Turn this over to the City Manager for introduction.
Thank you. So this is required by code, basically Section 6.28.01b. You have to annually establish the rate. It's last year it was reduced to 9 mils, and it's being proposed to return to the 10.5 mils that it had been at for historically long time. Council Clerk is the one that's researched this and prepared it. I'm sure she'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have concerning this matter.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Robinson?
Yes, thank you. Kind of odd to hear me support an increase in the mill rate, as I've fought long and hard to be able to bring that down over the years. But we're facing some things that have me really concerned. We have an incredible increase in wages that are coming. Yes, we have a little bit of money in sales tax coming in, but that's primarily due to the increase in the fuel price. And that's probably not going to go down, but we can't count on it. And yet we still have Title III that we'll be looking at as far as an increase in wages, as well as IBU coming up here. And we have shortened seasons. What a shortened season does is, we may get the fish tax from that, but what we're not going to get is the revenues that are generated by the service sector that continue to live here throughout the season. In a shortened season, there's less groceries being purchased. There's less, services that are being given that are performed that a sales tax would normally generate. So that has me concerned. And at this point, I don't see a reason to keep the mill rate low because we also have an increase in probably in some requests for our nonprofit sector. So we need to find a way to pay for it. So, and this is the only tool that the council has for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Bell?
Yeah. Last year when we set the rate on there, there was such a large increase in assessed values that that was done as a means of providing any kind of relief to the property taxpayers. Looking at what we've been presented so far for projected revenues, and what my original thought was last year too, that we are going to need more revenue in the future, and primarily because of increases in wages, increases in healthcare costs and such. But I think we're probably at a step or at a point where we can still step this up. And I would support, either a mill of 9.5 or 10 possibly. But furthermore, and we can get some more input from the
if maybe we still do need to go up to 10.5 on our mill rate. Thank you.
Councilman Tongo and Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be in support of this 10.5 mills that we've set for a long time. We did a break last year because of the raise, as we talk about the assessment rate that went up on a lot of the properties. But I think this time we should go back to this regular 10.5 mill rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Tundrell. Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be in support of this resolution at 10.5. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Coleman.
So last year I was not really in favor of the reduction, so I did vote for it, yes, because, you know, we did find the middle ground, and I was under the, you know, it was temporary just to give some quick relief. So because of the assessment, although I am finding huge spikes in insurance, I am sure many folks are still finding a large increase in their expenses. And like I said, and I even see the city is going to have to cover their huge increase. Now we're talking about insurance. You know, we're not talking about property. So I guess there's always going to be something. I've always found that I understand the logic behind us setting this rate, but like Mr. Robinson said, this is our one tool. This is the one thing that we get to have control over as far as revenues go. So it's really hard to look at this when you haven't seen an initial budget. And so I have believed that you guys, that a budget has been set on the 10.5 and not the 9.0 that we are currently in. I found that to be a little bit interesting. I would also entertain, not willing to step it, but I would actually prefer to see a budget first before finalizing that or before moving into setting the mill rate. It always seems like you just kind of put the cart before the horse. It's our one chance to kind of change things based on, so we can either change what we're spending or we can change our revenue sources. And so it would be nice to see if we do have a little bit of wiggle room. I'm going to say we probably don't, especially with the personnel costs that we're going to be seeing and everyone agreed to. So I don't see that. It'd just be nice to have that as an option.
If I may, I think, you know, you see we've been tabling things due to staff issues. So trust me, if there was time and room to move this back, we probably would have. I think the 8th of April is the drop dead date because of the way we have to. April 20th is the drop dead date. We have to, and I'm still coming up to speed on exactly what the conflicting pressures are, depending, you know, when we're getting budget requests, for example, the schools. As soon as we get theirs, we have only 30 days to make an answer on that. So we'll gladly play with the calendar, but some of the other extraneous issues, it's not that we're trying to put the cart before the horse on budgeting unless we want to really move up the budgeting calendar in the fiscal year. Speak to that some more. She knows more about it than I do at this point.
Thank you, Councilman Bowman. Now, Councilman Ruby.
You say we have to set the mill rate by April. Is that right? Solution? The city manager and mayor. Under code, you have to set it by June 15th. That's the code deadline. But there are other reasons that we would sure like to know that number way before June 15th, primarily for the budget, but also just some technical things. We need a month to program
our software with whatever mill rate you've set before we send out property tax bills. So there's another deadline, and those go out at the end of June. So if we could, if you get it done in the month of April, we'll be able to work with you. Do you think April 28th, or would you want to put it off till sometime in May?
I agree. I think it is kind of, we don't have all the numbers yet to really look at. And maybe the mill rate needs to be higher. How do we know that it doesn't, in order to balance this budget? Because we did agree to, give all the staff raises in the new contracts. And we do have the IBU coming up, and we don't know what that's going to be. And we need to take care of Title III. There are issues out there still to take care of. But I feel like, we're kind of jumping the gun, and I understand, too, that you guys need that number, but you could probably work a budget with, a number, the 10.5 or something, and then see how that comes out. Maybe you don't need to. I just pointed out one way to save $3 million out of the general fund, and that's one way that you would drop it, and that would actually, you could drop the mill rate, or not drop it, but stair-step it up a little bit by doing, something like that. Not that, we have to. And I'm not opposed to raising the mill rate. I agreed to, take care of the staff, and I think that was really important to do, and I stand by that. And I know that somehow we have to pay for it. But, again, knowing what that number is it going to be high enough? We don't know what our community grants are. We don't know what the schools, I guess I know what the school is asking. but I think we just need all the information before we could. So I would not be opposed to actually postponing this. And if it's only in, even until the end of April, that gives us a couple more meetings, three more meetings, I think, still to kind of discuss things. If that doesn't cause too much of a hardship on staff, I would be in support of something like that.
And what date are you proposing to put it off till?
The last meeting in April.
April 25th. Yeah. You're doing the first time. It's a pretty quick turnaround, I think, for the finance department to between April 25th and May 9th, to get that all done. But I'm not the finance director.
What about a special meeting that would give you guys enough time where we could still get, I wouldn't be opposed, the other council members might not want to do it. I wouldn't be opposed to a special meeting just to deal with this, to give finance a little bit more time and give us all, give us a little better idea of what the numbers are looking like.
If you guys want a special meeting, we'll do a special meeting. Right now, I think on April 10th, you're going to hear the community support grant request, and the directors will present their operating their operating budgets for the year. And then on April 11th, we'll hear from the school district. And the next budget things will then be on April 25th, you will set the you'll award the seniors graduating senior scholarships, establish the school funding, award the community support grants, and adopt the CMMT. So those are all budget related. And then May 9 and 23, you'll have first and second.
I'll go sing off maybe some of the other council members and put here and see what they think.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, there were two other things. We have some community issues that are probably going to raise their head this year. One being our clinic. And then two, the school has already cut their budget by $1 million and they're still $250,000 short. We need to figure that out. By bringing this up, I trust the management in what they're doing and timelines that they have. And a special meeting, I don't want to see because that creates more staff time to get that meeting ready. I don't think we're short staffed as it is, so let's not go down that road. I'm opposed to postponing this any further. This gives the management tool that they need to get better defined where they need to go with the budget, and that can be presented to us and get us passed. So I'd be opposed to postponing this at all.
Thanks, Councilman Robbins. Councilman Coleman, then Councilman Tungle.
Yeah, I guess after we're talking about the scheduling, what I failed to realize is that, you know, when you go into community grants, you've got to know what the whole operating budget is, because that's a percentage of what's being able to reward. It's hard to reward if you don't know what you're dealing with. So if you wait and postpone till the end of such a long time now, you've really started to snowball effect. It's just for me, it's an important tool, and if you're not going to even have the operating budget available for review until May, then it doesn't really help me at all. I mean, we still start putting some pieces together, because all we've seen is CMMP and rolling stock and what that's going to cost us. So I guess at this point I just really be of mind just to go ahead and move forward with the what we had it previous for many years in 10.5.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Tungo?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm ready to move forward on this tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's the support there to postpone. I am still of the mind that I think we can get away with setting this at 10.0 and still be fine on our budget. You know, this whole conversation about doing the money first, you know, if we get on the other side of the counter here, the dais here, and look at this, you know, some would say that, hey, you know, we're putting out there that we can spend $20, and by God, if you put $20 out there, it's going to get spent. We'll get $21 spent. So, you know, doing it the other way, it does put some limits on that, or put some constraints. But I'm still of the mind that I would support.
Hey, thank you. I kind of agree with everybody's point of view, but I don't agree with any postponement, because we went through this last year and we were sitting here for special meeting after special meeting to come to a number and eventually came to nine. That was to relieve the community's relief that they needed, and also get the amount of money that was requested for the grant program. We're back there again, and I understand some council people want to see a budget first. It doesn't really work that way. With the city, you've got to set what you have coming in for revenue and adopt take to heart that these directors and people that we have working for us are going to look for ways to make cuts, but they're not going to hurt the community by putting it in a situation of safe issues, the clinic, the school, community grant program. We have a responsibility for those areas. We need to help them do their job and taking care of our community. And I recommend you keep moving ahead. 10.5 is a number, and let's give the opportunity for our management to bring its budget back to us. Then we can say, well, it's too high. Well, all you do is take that money and move it back into another tilt and maybe into the council. I don't know how that'll work. I've never seen it happen, but it can happen.
I can just remind you that the goals that were shared with the staff were to try and keep things to a percentage increase or less for operating budgets. So the part of the budget personnel, finance does all of that with the variables as prescribed through the collective bargaining agreements and Title III approvals that you all went through this recent year. So you will have an opportunity to see how we are presenting that increase to all of you at, I think, the meeting on the 11th. Meeting on the 10th, all of us will be here to show you our budgets. We'll see. You know, if it went over that percentage increase, why? And that's probably the best time to have this particular discussion, is when you see why we're budgeting certain things for certain activities.
Okay, happening. Bill? Questions? Okay. The city clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir.
I'll restate the motion. The resolution 2023-10 establishing a rate of levy on assessed property within the city of Onalaska for fiscal year of 2024. Then we'll request a roll call vote on 2023-10.
Certainly, sir. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
No.
No.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5 yes and 1 no, the resolution 2023-10 establishing rate of levy has been approved for year 2024. Low rate set at 10.5. The next item is an added item to the agenda, review of a liquor license application for San Diego Tacos to Go. The council agenda was amended to add this item. The city clerk emailed their meeting memo regarding this liquor license application. Staff recommends no action, does anyone wish to make a motion? Motion. If not, we'll move on. Review of that liquor license, will that come up again? Again?
No. When, if the council chooses not to take any action, then you don't file a protest, and I inform the State of Alaska Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office of that the city will not make a protest, and then they can proceed with issuing the license.
All right, thanks. All right, the motion, move on. Item 13, council directives to city manager. Are there any directives to the city manager? Get a motion. Okay. On the community input and announcement, this is a final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. Are there any further announcements? Clerk, has anyone written comments submitted or anyone on Zoom or the phone wish to speak?
No, but Mr. Honka indicated he had something.
I just have two things, please. One, I wanted to publicly thank our first responders for the work that they did recently at another emergency search and rescue that our community went through. They did a good job. And the second is to acknowledge the outgoing status of Mr. Laddick. This is his last meeting officially as your interim. And kind of a strange thing to say, but at this age, to have learned so much from somebody in such a short period of time, it was kind of exciting to know that opportunity is still out there. So I really thank all of you for hiring him and Mr. Laddick for the work that he has helped show and steer me in the right direction around here.
Thank you, Bill, and I'd second that regarding Mr. Laddick. He's done a great job sitting in as interim city manager. You know, he has a great history in this community, great care for this community, and I wish you good luck, Chris, and we have a great time on time off.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you and the City Council for the opportunity. The City of Unalaska has a great future ahead, and there's just a lot of opportunity there to do good things, and I look forward to seeing it happen and getting reports about how it's happening. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Robinson,
yes, thank you, Mr. Laddick. Probably up here that worked with Mr. Laddick the most, and I really appreciate all you've done for this community. And I'm just hoping that you're still within telephone call of us. So, thank you again.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris, and we'll be talking to you next week or so, hopefully. Okay. Any other anyone on the phone? Boom.
No, sir.
Okay. I'll request a motion and a second to go into executive session.
I move to go into executive session to discuss two matters. Number one, personnel and financial matters related to upcoming contract negotiations with the Inland Boatman Union. Present during this discussion will be the mayor and council, along with Chris Laddick, Bill Homka, Amy Stanford, Peggy McLaughlin, and Patrick Bliss. And number two, personnel issues related to the city manager. Present during this discussion will be the mayor and council, along with Chris Laddick, Bill Homka, Amy Stanford, and Marjorie Dieter. Both matters, which, if immediately discussed in public, might negatively impact the interests of the city.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, second by Councilman Nicholson to go into executive session. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, we're in executive session at 7:58. We'll take a few minutes to get offline.
All right, so the users on Zoom, if you would please disconnect, other than Mr. Laddick and Mr. Tumble. All right, I think I'm ready to go.
Okay, thank you. We're back in the regular session at 9:08, and no, there is no formal action taken in executive session. Resolution 2023-11 is now on the table. Any motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2023-11?
I'll make a motion to adopt Resolution 2023-11.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nicholson. Council discussion. Councilman Robinson and Bell.
Yes, thank you. I support this resolution. We need to appoint the an acting city manager, as Mr. Laddick is done at the end of the month here. And again, thank Mr. Laddick for his service to us, and I support this. I will be in favor of it.
Thank you, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I will also support this resolution. Mr. Honka has been working with the city for quite a few years now, and him acting as an interim just lends some continuity to the administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be in full support of this resolution. I think Bill Humphrey is going to do a great job
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nixon. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I'll be in support of this. I think that Bill's been, you know, doing the job, and he's been doing a pretty good job of it. So I'll be supportive of it. And thank you, Chris. I appreciate everything you've done for us. And good luck in your next venture.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Councilman Coleman?
No, I don't have any comments.
Thank you very much. Councilman Tungo.
Yeah, I'll be in full support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, City Clerk, anyone signed up to write public comment?
No, sir.
I'll restate the motion. Motion by Councilman Robinson, second by Councilman Nicholson to approve appointing William Honka as acting city manager under Resolution 2023-11. Roll call vote, please.
Certainly. Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
And Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 6-0, the Resolution 2023-11 has been approved, appointing William Honka as the acting city manager. Congratulations, or tears, or whatever. You'll do a fine job. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are now adjourned at 9:17 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good night.
I'll be talking to you next couple of days. Thank you.
Good night, Bong.
Good night, everybody.
Right, Mom.
All right, I'm going to stop the Zoom meeting now.
Thanks, Alice. Good to see you.